What is going on? And welcome to another episode of the Beyond Rad podcast. My name is Chad, and this week we were joined by Scott Radinsky of the band Pulley. Few of you who may not know who Pulley is, they are a five-piece punk rock band. They've been around since 1996, and I've been a huge fan for a long time. Scott is a great vocalist. He's the lead singer of the band, and it was an absolute pleasure getting to talk to him and getting to know him better, his music better, and kind of understanding more about all of the things that make up Pulley as a band and make up him as a musician. So really excited for you guys to hear this one. But before we jump in, just a quick reminder to head on over to the band's social media pages, Instagram, Facebook, wherever you use social media, go find the band there. And big thing, make sure that you save their brand new album, wherever you listen to music, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, wherever it is, go find their brand new album, The Golden Years. Absolutely stellar. You'll love it. I love it. And you'll enjoy the heck out of it. But also while you're at it, you can also, you know, save the podcast, subscribe to it, and share the heck out of it if you enjoy it. And, you know, follow us over on social media. We'd love to hear from you. Reminder that there are clips over on YouTube that you can check out. Makes it a little bit easier to digest, maybe even easier to share. If you want to do that, head on over to YouTube and search for the Beyond Rad podcast there. But without further ado, let's just jump right on in. Well, first and foremost, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Yeah. So for the few unfortunate individuals who may not know who you are, let's give them a quick introduction. Tell us a little bit who you are and maybe something unique about you that people may not know.
Okay. Well, my name's Scott. I sing in a band, Pulley. I'm a dad. Been a husband for a long time. Something about me that people don't know. I'm left-handed, but I brush my teeth with my right hand. That's about a pretty unusual thing. Other than that, the internet, man, what is there not?
I know. Yeah, I mean, you've got a storied history, man. It's pretty awesome. It's an absolute honor for me to be talking with you. It's fantastic. It's funny because I grew up, you were one of the bands I grew up listening to. You were one of those foundation bands for me, right? Like, you know, Lagwagon, NoFX, MXPX, Pulley, right? Like, it's kind of that whole punk era for me as my sister grew up listening to it, and she kind of passed it on to me.
That's a good sister you got.
Oh, I know. She's,
yeah, all the staples right there you just mentioned.
Oh, yeah, man. Saves the Day, Can't Forget Them, Get Up Kids, you know, that whole, I mean, there's just a lot of great bands during that late 90s, early 2000s. That was just like, I'm glad that a lot of you, including yourselves, are continuing to make great music, because it's just kids nowadays need to hear it. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm curious with the new album, obviously when this drops, the album will have been out for 1 week. I believe 1 week. And this is your seventh or eighth studio album.
Seventh. No, okay. Eighth.
I mean,
yeah, eighth.
Okay.
Eighth album and a couple of EPs and some, compilations, whatnot. But yeah, our eighth studio album.
I mean, that's incredible. From what the first one released in, was it 96?
96. Yeah.
Man, what a awesome journey. I watched it was a 2-hour documentary about you guys and kind of the starting phases of the band, obviously kind of the background of who you guys are. I'm curious with life, I'm sure life has obviously changed quite a bit from then to now. It's mentioned even in your new stuff that, you know, this is kind of a passion project. This isn't something to make money. This isn't something to be kind of a career path, quote unquote. So tell me a little bit about how how music has fit into this whole journey where it was literally not anything to do with money. It was just music.
Well, I think, you know, if you polled any musician that currently plays in a band, they'll all give you the same feedback where when we all started jamming in the garage, learning how to play instruments and learning how to write songs or cover songs. And it was fun. And, you know, your goal was to like get enough songs to go play a party and then maybe play a show. And so, you know, for us, I think that's just kind of what it's always been. And we've really never steered from that model of what it is. And, you know, making it in a band in this particular genre of music or any particular genre of music is extremely difficult.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of musicians, and I can't really speak, obviously, not being one in that position, but I feel like from a perspective that I've had from being on the sidelines, watching other bands that we played with, they tend to hate what they do. It becomes not fun anymore. They don't like each other. They don't hang out. It's just not what it was when they all first started. And so, you know, I think by the time we had started this band, we had all been in bands previously for, you know, 10, 12, 15 years up to the point when Pulley started. And I think that was just a conscious effort made was let's do it this way, regardless of what the outcome is and how tempted it is to take every tour or do everything we possibly can. Let's just keep our feet on the ground and be real about it and not lose why we started doing this in the first place. Because I think the reason Pulley started was we were all in a position where I don't want to say burnt out, but just kind of started losing a little bit of that love for playing music and writing. Yeah. We wanted to recapture that and we did. And, you know, it's been going on for over 25 years now. So that's kind of, I think, where it's at and where it's been and where it's headed.
That's incredible though. Cause you know, it is something that I feel like it becomes a job for some people. And I honestly, one of the things that I've loved about your guys' music is it's always stayed true to the roots that you have. Like it, in terms of not necessarily the, like, I don't know your personal background aside from obviously your baseball career and whatnot, but I mean, like what your first album was at its core in terms of being kind of being a real person, like following your own life and just kind of living life as just a, you know, I don't know. There's so much to it, but there's obviously the angst and anger there that goes along with the punk rock scene. But I feel like you guys have remained true to that even as you've aged. And it's been very much a message of like, hey, we're all people, man, especially obviously with the new single, the, you know, the one that's kind of being tatted right now, Lonely. It's like, no, this is, we're all humans. We're all on this journey together. So I would imagine, like, I'm curious for you with the pandemic, having been, you know, part of the process while you're writing, how much impact did that have on how you wrote this album?
You know, just as much as the impact that the world around us has on any given day or time or year. I think that's where we've pulled a lot of our interest from and a lot of lyrically things that have gone on in our life. And, you know, the dark side always tends to pull you in. And I think, you know, a lot of songwriters will tell you that, you need that spark, that motivation. And a lot of times in this particular style, even though it might sound poppy and catchy and, you know, happy, you know, there is that angst, there is that anger and that's what comes out. And the pandemic certainly provided some content, you know, to write about. Mm-hmm. Different things, looking at different, you know, not just one particular thing of a pandemic, but just kind of like how it affected all of us in all different ways, you know, from just being able to go to a grocery store, mental health, how it, you know, just different things that affected different people. But you know, there's also a ton of other stuff that goes on in the world that kind of helps in that writing process as well. I think the biggest part of, you know, not probably steering away from your question is just helped us personally with guys not having to work and being able to write and spend time in our room and just jam. And that's precious time that, you know, you don't normally get when there's five adults who have jobs and families. So it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds lame, but it was kind of cool.
No, I mean, it actually makes complete sense, honestly, because it really is like, there's something about resets, right? Like I've read a lot and I've tried, I'm not very good at it, but I've tried to do meditation, but like, you know, it's kind of a reset, and the pandemic was almost like a life reset for some people, where it was like, hey, I can finally kind of come back to who I am and live in this moment. It was obviously a terrible thing in a lot of ways, but it was also really good for that little bit, right? For some people. And for you, when you were, you know, able to come back together and start writing music, obviously it hadn't been too long. 2016 was the most recent record, right?
Correct.
And so it hasn't been terribly long that you guys haven't written music or put out music, but, was there intentions of putting out music again, or did the pandemic kind of spark that?
There's definitely intention of, we had songs in the can that we were, working on. And I just think it kind of accelerated things a little bit and didn't really give us an excuse to like say, oh, we'll get to that later. It was like, no, we're going to get to it now.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we did.
That's awesome. Has there ever been a time in your, what is it, 26 years now, where you were like, I'm kind of ready to call it quits on the music?
No. And I think, going back to the earlier question in the beginning, is part of the reason why is because of why we started the band in the first place and what's been keeping it going. So, we've never really gotten to that burnt out point, and we've just always enjoyed jamming and writing and playing. And when time allows and the opportunity's there, we're going to try to take the best and make the most of it.
Heck yeah, man. I freaking love that mentality, because it really is so important. Like for you, when you're writing a song and you're putting all your thoughts together and trying to come up with a cohesive album, something that really feels like it's telling a story, telling what you're trying to accomplish. What are some of the main things that you take note of when you're writing a song, and things that you're thinking about most often?
Well, I mean, I think it starts with, we're trying to write a good song. We're trying to have good music, some good lyrical content, and something that flows together and sounds like a Pulley song. And we probably write, for every song that makes a record, there's probably five or six songs that don't. And per each song. So there could be 20, 25 songs that just, I mean, I have on my computer that are just, I wouldn't say scrap, but just, they don't end up being a song.
Yeah, they're not up to snuff, huh?
Yeah, sometimes, some, we call them run-on sentences. It's just like a musical riff that's jamming, and it's like, wow, it sounds really good. And then I might sit for a couple of days and try to figure out what to sing over it and find a melody. And, well, this riff's really good, but it's really nothing you can sing over, so it's probably not going to be a song. And then, like for Lonely, for example, that song Lonely that you mentioned, I'm humming this tune in my head, driving in the car, and I can't wait to get home. And I pick my guitar up, and it just, within 3 minutes, there's a song. And it's very simple. It's basic, but it's catchy, and everything just happens.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not. But I think for the most part, it's we're trying to write a song, and write as many good songs as we can. And that's kind of what gets put together to throw into an album.
Yeah.
A complete record.
Yeah. And I'm curious, cause I know what I would say on this, but what makes a Pulley song to you? Like, what is it that makes a Pulley song?
Well, being a fan of music my whole life, and maybe this sounds, I don't want to sound selfish, but I think what makes a song for me is, when I hear the voice. When I hear the singer, it identifies to me the band, and then the notes underneath it, and the style, and the kind of the format of the song. And I don't want to say that we haven't gotten creative over the years, because there's a little bit here and there. We throw in some different pieces, but I mean, for the most part, I think you can identify from the first Pulley record you've ever heard. If you're a fan, you can listen to a song. Oh, that's a Pulley song. You can just identify with it. And I don't know if you can say that about every band. You know, I hear a Bad Religion song and it's a Bad Religion song. It's a No Effects song. I mean,
Goldfinger. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all the same. So to me, that's what kind of identifies with is the playing, the singing, the direction of the songwriting and how the song's formatted and, you know, the style of it. And you have expectations as a listener, what you want to hear. And hopefully that comes out.
Yeah. You know? And kind of going back to the topic, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but you know, you're talking about obviously the freedom of not making this a career gives you a lot more freedom to create more music the way you want to make it. Do you ever feel a pressure from yourself or from maybe even external forces saying, hey, you've got to make this song this way because this is what the fans expect? Or is it always just because there's not really expectations there that you just are able to write what you feel like you want to write?
I think we write what we want to write. And, you know, I don't think there's ever been pressure to say, well, we can't play that. It has to be, you know, we have like acoustic songs. We have all kinds of stuff, but we write what we like, and what we like is what the Pulley sound is.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And you've obviously had a bit of, you know, a few different band members throughout the history, right? But the three of you that are core members have been there from the beginning?
There's been two of us from the beginning.
Oh, okay.
Me and our guitar player, Mike. Our bass player, Tyler's been for quite a while. And then, you know, we've had I won't say revolving door, but we've had some different drummers over time, four or five different drummers. And we just recently, we've had three guitar players in total. The original guitar player passed away.
Yeah. Sad.
And then, we got a buddy of ours we had known for years who jammed in the same studio with us. We had been in bands with previously, and his name was Jim, and he played for God, probably close to 20 years. And then, just recently on this last record in the last 2 years, we've recruited another longtime friend that we've been in bands with forever, named Trey. And he's been, I mean, it's all family. It's really, we've never had any of these outside people. It's always been people from in within our little world. And so I think that's been a huge part of being able to sustain it as well, is we're not foreigners to each other. We've known each other for a long time on a friend level.
Yeah.
So jamming's made it kind of fun as well.
It seems like that community that you guys are in, that kind of punk, skate punk world, seems pretty small and pretty tight knit between all of the different bands and stuff. Is that pretty accurate?
I'd say it's accurate. You know, there's a lot of bands within our scene that, you know, if we play a show and we're backstage, it could be 5-6 years that we haven't seen these people, but we're still around and we all know each other. So, you know, we probably don't pound the pavement as much as a lot of the bands do, but, you know, enough to stay relevant and keep those friendships. But yeah, you're right. It's definitely not a huge scene. It's a pretty smaller, tight knit community.
Yeah. And, you know, through your time, obviously, like you said, you know, because you've had, obviously, if people don't know, the professional baseball career, you were, you know, this wasn't your full-time gig. You were a coach as well, right? You coached pitching as well. So for you, I'd imagine the tours were probably, you know, when they came, it was probably a pretty big deal. What were some of like your favorite tour memories that you have?
Well, we spent a lot of time going to Europe. I mean, I was on an 8-month tour in the United States with the baseball thing every year for 35 years. So we had opportunity to go to Europe or South America and Canada, and not to discredit the United States, but we just had the opportunity to go on. We basically looked at them as vacations. You know, the other guys had full-time jobs as well. So it was kind of a relief for all of us to be able to just get in a van in some foreign country with a bunch of maps we didn't know how to read and just go for it and meet all different people. And it went over really well. And I think that's why we continued to keep doing that on an annual basis. So we looked forward to it and we enjoyed touring, and it's always a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, those European countries and Canada, they're lucky enough to have you coming through right, you know, within the next couple of weeks. Us here in the US, we're not as fortunate.
It's just been hard. I mean, I wish we could, but we're not in that so-called click, you know,
yeah.
where, you know, this didn't really go over for us.
Yeah. That's interesting. What, like, when you say it didn't go over, is it just kind of like that the people in Europe and Canada, like the scene is bigger? What is it that, like, that's different?
I think, you know, here in the States, I think we could be a good direct support band for a bigger band, you know, a Pennywise type band or some mm-hmm. of these other bands that, you know, the Bouncing Souls or other bands that go out and can headline. But for whatever reason, those tours aren't ever offered to us. We don't ever get that opportunity to go out and play in our own country. I don't think we would have a successful tour on our own. We're not that level of a band. You know, we could play some smaller clubs, but even that might be sketchy on a Wednesday night. You know, so for us to get the precious time and the opportunity to go do something, I think, you know, if we're going to go do 3 weeks somewhere, we want to try to make sure that 2.5 of them are going to be worth our while and pretty good. And I mean, there's nothing more than I would love to have gone to Boston and New York and Philadelphia and played these places on a regular basis. But like I said, we've never been offered that opportunity by other bands to help us along. And that's kind of what we need to go out and tour the States.
That makes sense. And, I am curious with, obviously your baseball career was overlapping all through the 90s into the 2000s, right? With Pulley.
Well, my baseball career has been going on since 1986.
86. Okay.
Yeah. So long before I was in a band called 10-Foot Pole, long before any of that stuff ever even happened. So it's basically been overlapping the entire time I've been playing music, other than, you know, my high school days. And
okay.
Then I was playing baseball in high school as well. So,
yeah,
you know, but yeah, it's been hand in hand the whole way.
And is that, was that like for you, was the band a nice release to kind of like take your mind? Because I'd imagine, obviously, professional sports, like, I love sports. I'm not terribly athletic, but I love sports. And I'd imagine that it's very grueling to be an athlete. And so
it's an insane grind.
And I mean, especially baseball, what is it? 100 and something games a year.
Well, it's 162, but, you know, that's just the season. You got 30 games in spring training and you're there a couple of weeks before the game starts. It's over 200 days a year.
Plus you're then hopefully you make it to the postseason and you're in there too.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a bonus, but just what you know is on your schedule is going to be, it's going to be a solid eight and a half months every year living out of a suitcase.
Oh, sounds brutal. How did you,
I mean, it is what it is.
I mean, but it's also like it's a huge blessing because very few people are able to make it to that level, which is really incredible. But it also is like I guess for me, from my perspective, I'm like, I've got two sons and I've got my wife, and I was like, I don't know, that'd be a really tough life. And so that's where I come from, right, in my head.
Oh, yeah.
And you said you've been married for quite a while. Were you married during your baseball years, or were you single during that time?
I've been going on 30 years of being married. So I played a couple of years in the minor leagues and then a couple of years in the major leagues before I got married. But yeah, you got to have a supportive family. That's for sure. And my wife's been a trooper. I mean, my family's been out, they've seen the entire, you know, they've seen the country times 10. And, you know, we've been to every major city, every little podunk town, you know, every minor league ballpark and major league ballpark there is, you know, in this country to offer. And, you know, my kids have grown up around that. And I think when they were younger, you know, packing up and going for the summer, you know, when they get out of school, it was fun for them. And as they got older, it was a little tougher, but, you know, my wife was like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
And they didn't really have a choice. And then I was fortunate to, towards the end, to start working close to home. So for me, it was like, I was just commuting to work and then, we're going to go on a trip for 5 days or 7 days. Yeah. Not so much of a big deal when you get to come home. You know, but yeah, it wears on you for sure. And it's a lot of work. And you know, like I said, I owe it all to them because they allowed me to continue and to pursue that and to you know, to be able to enjoy it and not feel guilty about what I was doing.
That's fantastic. And for that balance, you've got three major things in your life at that point. Then you've got music, obviously. You know, with 10-foot pole, you left due to not wanting to be a full-time musician. You had obviously your baseball career.
I was asked to leave. Like to sit pound that nail, but I didn't leave on my own. But I'm glad that I was asked to leave, because the next day we started pulling, we're still going.
Heck yeah. So, I mean, honestly, like it's funny because I was like, I've heard of that band 10-foot pole, but I knew who Pulley was. So I'm grateful too, because it worked out great for my music listening. But you had obviously those three major things in life: baseball, family, and music. How did you find balance? How did you balance everything?
Well, it's all I've ever known. So
valid.
that's a tough question to answer, because my whole life, this is all I've done. And I don't know how to phrase it any differently other than being extremely grateful and thankful that I've never had to have a job, a real job. and I've been able to live this kind of so-called fantasy. And it's just who I am.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, that's a great way of putting it though. 'Cause I guess when that's all you know, you don't really think about it, right? It's just kind of like, this is my life. This is how it is.
I never got to go to work, come home, eat dinner with my family, play with my kids on the weekends. I mean, I did, but it wasn't like an every single month, every week, every day type thing.
And, yeah.
And, this is what it's been.
So yeah.
This is how my family's grown, and we're close. And I think we're a lot closer because of it. We've had a home in California forever, but it's kind of cool when you pack up and you go away for the summer and you're in this little apartment with, you know, five of us, and we're in this little two bedroom apartment and in a different city. And it's just, it was cool. It was a good experience. I'd like to think it was a good experience for my kids growing up, for sure. And don't get me wrong, when I'm home, I definitely made up for it. You know, I don't think you have to be, as a parent, you don't have to be present. It's who you are when you are there. And I made sure that when I was there, they didn't feel like they didn't have a dad when I was gone.
Yeah. I mean, that right there is parenting advice for the ages. That's exactly what it is. It's the fact is, like, I have to work. I have to be away from home. But the moment I am home, my kids know that they have dad. They have me. And that's so valuable. And the fact that you did that and made that a priority, obviously, sings volumes about who you are as a person, but also like where your values lie. And, you know, as you've had this career and your kids have grown up in the midst of this whole career, are your kids more on the punk rock side or more on the baseball side?
Well, I have two daughters and a son.
Okay.
And I don't think they ever really got into the music.
Dang it, man.
I was like kind of there. My son, maybe a little bit. I was joking with someone the other day. Like I heard Fugazi in his room. He shaved his head and bleached his hair blonde. He's not some punk kid, but I know that he likes music, and he's a little more open than the girls were. You know, they're growing up in the whole Demi Lovato and all that kind of stuff. Which was cool. I supported that. I took my daughter to see Hillary Duff or whatever her name is. But they just kind of knew it was something that I did. And they go, oh yeah, my dad's in this band. And that's kind of the way they saw it.
Oh man. I was really hoping for a little glimpse of hope, because, you know, I'll turn on my music and my kids are like, dad, can you turn on something I would actually like? I'm like, you should like this. This is MXPX, or, you know what I mean? And I'm like, come on, guys.
Hey, believe me, I tried, man. Oh. I tried. And when they were in the car, they didn't have a choice. That's what they had to deal with. And
I do force it too. Hey, I'm driving. I choose.
Yeah. I'm not playing the stuff I listened to when I was a kid, like the old early 80s hardcore. I mean, it's a little, like you said, MXPX. It's a little more, it's musical. You know?
Yeah.
It's not bad. You guys can deal with it for the 30 minutes it's going to take to get to your grandma's house.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. It's like, I try to do dance parties at the end of the night and I'll turn on punk rock. I'm like, this is so much. And they're just like, and then I turn on Marshmallow and they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, man, dang it. But I was hoping that, you know, I was hoping that you'd give me that glimmer of hope that I could just expect them to be punk rock fans too, you know?
You never know. Like I said, my son's 19 and he's playing Fugazi. He's playing the Descendants, playing Misfits. And it's like, all right. He messes around on the guitar. It's like, I think he's got a little bit in there, but he's got a wider variety of music than I do. Mm-hmm. You know, I listen to a lot, but not to the extent that they do.
It's funny that that older music is coming back again. Like that early 90s, skate punk, even late 80s punk is coming back. Did you ever ask your son, like,
where'd it go? Did it disappear?
It kind of did, right? It kind of, like, even now, like, I'm a huge punk rock fan in general. And so, like, my high school years, it was the pop punk phase, right? Like, you had the Yellow Cards, the Simple Plans, the Good Charlottes, all of those pop, more mainstream punk rock bands, Blink-182 right. as well. And then it just, like, instantly just cut off. It just, like, disappeared. And now it's coming back thanks to Travis Barker, I think, obviously, and making pop punk a little bit more mainstream again. And I'm like, man, a lot of these bands that I loved, I forgot about them, sadly. And like, and then I realized, wait, they never stopped making music. I just stopped listening because I kind of followed the trends of whatever was going on. And did that, like, for you, as you're making music, continuing to pump out awesome stuff after awesome stuff, is there ever a time where you're like, you're looking at the scene and things go slow for you and then pick back up? Or has it been pretty consistent throughout the whole journey?
You know, like when I first started playing music in the early 80s, it was thriving. Hardcore was thriving, especially in LA area here. And it was starting to get out into the suburbs. And, you know, the younger kids like myself were shaving our heads. And then we started kind of getting into skateboarding and, you know, the surf culture scenes out by the beach were developing their own style of music, but hardcore was thriving. And then the late 80s, it kind of started to die a little bit. And you wondered, like, wow, is punk dying out? And then, you know, I'm sure you've heard this by other people, Bad Religion put out Suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of, you know, Suffer and No Control. And it just seemed like, okay, there's a new direction out here of the same punk rock music, but it's getting better. It's more melodic. And that was a revival for sure. And, you know, once that happened for me, I don't know if I ever, I mean, obviously it's slowed down to an extent where we'd go to shows and, you know, there might be 100 people instead of 300 people or, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. But there was still always that core of people that were into it. And then there was the people like you're mentioning, like yourself, who kind of got into, like, I remember we played a show with Yellow Card. They came out to this area and they were living out here. And we played a show at this place called the Ventura Theater. Mm-hmm. And it was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And it kind of hit me on this particular night. We headlined and there was about 450 people there and it was pretty good. A Yellow Card played. And then there was like 150 people there. We were like, oh, shit. this is, you know, that kind of made me realize, like, well, they're just not into us, but they were just, that was getting really popular at the time. And mm-hmm. that's just the way it was. But I don't know if it's ever really slowed down in my mind. I think it's always been there because these bands have continued to put out records and they've continued to play live and write songs. And, you know, maybe the crowds have diminished a little bit and then kind of gone within phases. That's like anything.
Yeah.
Everything kind of has its cycles. Bell bottoms were popular in the 60s. Yeah, you know, I'm still waiting for, like, you know, there was a period in time in the 90s when skaters had these huge baggy clothes and then everybody went to skinny jeans and now they're kind of out of the skinny jean phase. And who knows, man, fashion's music's like fashion. It kind of comes and goes in waves. But I think the ones that are real passionate about what they do, it's always going to remain there. And the music's always going to be played and written.
I, yeah, That's exactly. I mean, yeah, eventually I think Jinko jeans actually are back now. I don't know how, but I know that the middle part is back, you know, the bowl cut middle part. It's
that's weird. See, that's weird for me. I haven't seen that since high school.
Yeah. It's weird to look back, like look at these kids, like, you know, I'm realizing like, oh, I'm at the boomer stage now. I'm getting old. I'm getting to this point where I'm like, I still wear skinny jeans in my Vans. Just don't bother me. This is what I wear. And for you, like, I'd imagine it was a little bit different. Obviously coming at music from the angle that you did, where it was more of the side project passion side, passion of things. When you were, you know, putting out music, that first record, what were your expectations when you first started, and like with Pulley? Because I guess obviously 10 Foot Pole is a different project, but with Pulley, when you put out that first record, was there any expectations, or was it all just like, hey, we love what we're doing, let's just put this out there and have fun?
Well, it was, let's put this out there and we love what we're doing and we're gonna have fun. I mean, So I'll give you a little backstory. So I've been playing with the guys in 10 Foot Pole. We all went to school together. We've been playing for like 10, 12 years. And our break came and we put out a record on Epitaph. It was called Rev. It did really well. The scene started booming. The Offspring was selling records. Pennywise was selling records. And that particular scene was starting to get popular. Music was being played on these surf videos, snowboard videos. And it's like, wow, this is kind of happening. And then I was asked to leave. So I picked up the phone and the first guy I called was the guitar player, Mike. And I said, hey, want to start a band? Want to have fun? I want it to be about having fun, because my experience with 10 Foot Pole was fun until things kind of started getting popular. Mm-hmm. And then I don't want to say it was ego, but it was like, wow, we can make it now. And they lost sight of why we were jamming for the previous 10, 12 years in the first place. So I didn't necessarily fall into that trap, probably because of my schedule, and knew that the reality was I'll never be able to do that mm-hmm. full time like that. So go ahead and live your dream, and I'm going to get some friends and start a band together that we're going to continue to have fun. Expectations, 100%. There was expectations to write good music and put out records. And, you know, Brett from Epitaph basically signed us unheard and wow. said, put together some songs. And he said, and we'll record them. So we did actually do like a short demo of two or three songs. I sent it to him and he's like, yeah, that's cool. Go in the studio and record an album. And he goes, and he said flat out, he goes, you guys don't really have to worry about touring. You just have to put out good songs and good records and they'll sell. People will want to hear the music if it's good. And I think the days of touring, I don't know if you have to go out. It's a bonus to be able to go out and play your songs live and you win over fans, but I don't think necessarily you have to release a record and go out and play live anymore with the ability to access music. And if word of mouth gets around and people like something, they're going to listen to it.
Yeah.
And if they are coming to town, not all those people go to shows. And I've learned that kind of the hard way. And I've learned that, you know, I've had those experiences where, oh, we got to go out and tour. We got to go out and tour on this record. And we've done it. And it was no better than it was before the record was out. So, or no worse, one or two, you know?
Yeah.
Either way, the expectations were write good songs, put out a good product and set the bar here so that everything that comes after it has to stay at that level.
Yeah.
And those have been our expectations.
And that makes complete sense. I like that they're, you know, like, obviously I'd imagine the rep from Epitaph, he already obviously signed 10 Foot Pole knowing what you were capable of and what your songwriting style was. And is that why he kind of just like, all right, dude, let's make some music together? Is that why he was willing to sign you guys right off the rip?
I think so. I think that had a lot to do with it. You know, the success we had with the previous release, you know, I was like, yeah, let's go for it. And I think there was a lot of faith and trust there and knew that we were capable of doing something like that. And I hopefully like to think we did. I mean, we were fortunate enough to be able to put out 5 records there. And, you know, to me, that's still to this day, the best punk rock record label there is.
Oh yeah. I mean, even now with what they're doing, they're always kind of ahead of the curve when it comes to what the counterculture music is. They're very much attuned to kind of like putting out counterculture music, as Epitaph Records is. I think they've done that for years and years and years now. Cause there was, you know, there's a few different record labels that have just done really great work. I don't know anything about Vagrant anymore, but Vagrant Records back in the day, Epitaph Records back in the day, you know, Geffen Records back in the day, that was kind of like the record labels that I would look to for like good music. And that's how I knew about you guys was through one of the, I think Epitaph did one of those sample CDs where it had like,
none of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was one of those is where I heard you guys for the first time. And I was like, sold.
And, you know, they had the best bands. I mean, they had Rancid, they had Pennywise, they had, you know, NOFX. They had these bands that like The Offspring. So being able to ride some of those coattails is like, I think as fans, you know, we were on those compilations with those bands. We were like, people would give it a listen because, well, I like this band and I like that band. And, you know, hitting on what you said a little bit, I think that I'm not a fan of all the stuff they put out nowadays. I'm not going to lie, but you're right. They are ahead of the curve because they have to. Music evolves and in order to stay relevant and stay up to speed. And that's the one thing I have respected about them is they weren't afraid to take a chance and put out some, I mean, they just signed the Linda Lindas. I mean, things like that like, you know, then they started a little subsidiary label that had, you know, Hank Williams III and, you know, a lot of these old blues guys and, It's you know what you're going to get, or you knew what you were going to get at a certain time. Now, I don't think you can just pick up an Epitaph record and assume you're going to get the next Offspring album because it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Or the next, anyways, but they are broadening their audience and reaching out to a lot different variety of people and making their labels still survive. And they're still surviving.
Yeah. I mean, it is really, you know, it kind of goes back to the same thing with even with what you're doing. They're doing something that's in their DNA almost, right? What you've done as a musician, as a band, it's like you're creating stuff that's true to who you are. And Epitaph is staying true to who they are as kind of a counterculture slash like, you know, music revolutionaries, I guess, when it comes to that new genre, that new up and coming generation. They're not looking for the next necessary, you know, TikTok hit. They're looking for something that really speaks to a generation, like what you guys did, especially with your first few records. Like there was a lot of things in there that just were like speaking to not just you guys, but that whole entire era of that 90s punk rock. It really spoke to a lot of kids, and those kids are now adults, and they're like, that's shaped a lot of our dialogue, right? In the world, mm-hmm. because of stuff like what you guys have done. And when you look back on your 26 years as Pulley, and hopefully many more years to come, and you reflect, like, do you ever think about the impact you've had or like the reach you've had, or is that just something you never really consider?
The only time that it really comes to light is when people make you aware of it, to be honest with you. Because I don't know if you sit out as a band to try to change the world or make this, I mean, some bands probably do. They have this aspiration. We're going to make it huge and you're going to change the world. But, like I said, we just wanted to write good songs and, you know, there's been a lot of genuine moments along the way where people have hit us up at shows, you know, each one of us as individuals separately and just told us how, like, you know, it got them through a tough time or it really changed this particular moment in their life. And, you know, that's pretty humbling when that's when you really kind of take a step back and you go, wow. But that's not why you do it or how you set out to go about it. It's very humbling and gratifying and honoring to have a human being genuinely look you in the eye and tell you how important this was to them and how you would say spoke to them. And, I mean, that's like the greatest compliment in the world.
Yeah. Cause like I said, when Mike was like, yeah, let's get this set up, I was instantly like, kind of like, you know, giddy schoolgirl type thing, right? Where I was like, these guys have like, this was such a band that I listened to for years and years. And so it was like this idea to me that I can, you know, have you on the podcast. It was just this funny idea. And I was like, I wonder if he ever thinks about that. Like what other people think when it comes to that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's awesome. And, real quick, I don't want to take too much more of your time. Do you have just a few more minutes?
I got nothing but time, man.
All right. I am obviously with the new record. I've listened through it a couple times, and I'm lucky enough to have gotten the early release. I think my favorite song on the record, I really enjoy Wake Up a lot. And The Golden Life. So obviously you're the title track of the album, but for you, when you look on this album, what are some of the highlights from this album for you individually?
I mean, for me, it's, I'm attached to every song, obviously. Yeah. there's some songs that I feel are probably a little stronger, you know, like you mentioned Wake Up. You're the first person that I've ever heard say that. And that's the beauty of it, is how things hit different people different ways. Mm-hmm. If you ask each member in the band, like, well, what do you think the best song is? We'll give you five different answers. Mm-hmm. So, I know that collectively there's three songs we've been playing live, and I always feel like if you see a band live, usually the songs that are in the set for the most part are the songs that they're behind 100%. And not that they're not behind the other songs, but they just feel that those are probably stronger songs to play live. I like the opening track. I like the song Second Wind. I like Lonely. I like the song you were playing earlier, Align the Planets. I think there's I'm attached to all of them. Mm-hmm. And I personally enjoy most of them, but you know, like I said, the few that we're playing live, there's a reason why. And I don't know what that is, but there's just a reason why we're playing them live, and we want people to hear them.
Yeah. I mean, that makes complete sense to me. Maybe this is actually kind of a unique position that you have, where you haven't toured as much. You've obviously toured quite a bit and supported your albums a bunch. Have you gotten burnt out on any of the songs where you just kind of feel like you outgrew any of your songs at all? Or do you feel like you kind of stopped playing some of them or stopped listening to some of the songs that you've written?
I wouldn't say stop listening to them. There's songs that we've never played live that I really like a lot, that I think, man, these are good songs. But for whatever reason, the songs that we play live are the songs that we can get through a set with and not have people just kind of standing there and staring at us. and songs that maybe I've gotten burnt out on or maybe taken a different outlook towards are songs that I was all hyped on to play. And then we'd play them for, you know, five, six, seven shows. And you could just tell, like, man, this isn't going over well. Mm-hmm. And I learned a long time ago, what I think's cool probably isn't cool. And, you know? So I'm okay with that. And I'm not going to force something down anybody's throat. So we use the audience as the sounding board and the feedback to, you know, their reaction is like what goes over well. And sometimes, you know, we're playing songs that I might not like, but they go over the best.
Okay.
You know, and for a personal note, it's probably struggling. Like, well, can I hit that note today? Cause you know, when I sing 3, 4, 5 days in a row, it gets a little tough.
And, yeah.
You know, it's like, God, I don't look forward to playing that song. Except, but I know it's going to be a good one. But I like all the songs. I mean, I really do. And I wouldn't say I've ever gotten burnt on them, but I think, like I said, that, you know, it's the fans that kind of tell you what they want to hear.
Yeah. Which song has the best reception when you play it?
You know, Cashed In still to this day, probably our first song that, you know, on the first record still has, it's pretty well received, goes over well.
I love that song so much.
Oh, good. Cool, man. It just depends on where we're at and the setting we're in. And, you know, it's like the bill we're on with the band. It's like, you know, if we're playing with a band that's kind of the same style as us, we can probably play almost anything that we have. If we're paired up with a band like JFA or some kind of older school band, they just want to hear fast music. They don't want to hear, you know, polished, poppy, singing melodic type sound. They want to hear just in your face screaming. So, it just depends. Depends where we're at and how it goes over. If it's a true pulley crowd, we can play anything.
Yeah.
And that's always fun, but that doesn't happen very often.
Well, it is interesting because I feel like the crowds nowadays, when you're playing a show, I'll bet the crowds are a lot older. So the energy might be a little different than it was back in the day.
Yes, for sure. Like as far as the movement and stuff. And you know, we did a thing, I don't know what year it was, might've been when did the pandemic start? 2020?
Yeah. March of 2020.
So in 2021, we played this parking lot gig. And it was like a drive-in show where everybody had to sit in their little isolated spot.
Uh-huh.
But it was cool, man. It was like people were far away from us. Obviously, there was nobody up close. I was cool with it. It was great. It was just different. It was fun. And it sucks when you're in a small club and the people are right in your face and they're just not into it.
Yeah.
But the older people, whether they're just standing there or not, you can feel the energy, man. You can see their heads are still moving. They're still maybe mouthing a few words here and there, and they're definitely appreciative when the song's over. So that energy is huge. And,
yeah.
And you don't necessarily need to have people diving off stage to make us feel good.
Yeah.
As long as people are receiving, if they don't leave the room, then they're into it. You know, that's the way I see it. They didn't turn their backs on us and walk away.
Yeah. Yeah, I've found myself at shows just kind of like in the corner. I'm like, I hope this band knows that I really, really enjoy this show, but I'm not jumping around. I'm not going crazy, you know.
I've been in the back of the room watching shows for the last 30 years.
You're in one of those lucky positions, though. You're expected to be in the back of the room watching the show.
I want to show my appreciation to a band. I don't want to just stand on the side of the stage and be that, you know, band snob guy.
What was the coolest show you were at? Like the coolest bill that you were a part of?
We did some shows on that first record with Propaganda up in Eastern Canada. That was just amazing.
They are way underrated.
They were a three piece at the time. And I just remember, you know, I don't even know if their second record had been put out yet. But they were playing songs on it and they had just gotten their new bass player, the current guy they have now. I just remember listening going, there's no way in the world that three guys can sound this good. It sounded like an orchestra.
That's
and they,
awesome.
They sounded just like their records. And it was so tight and so good. And we were in, you know, an area of Canada where they were obviously well received and, you know, their whole what they stand for, you know, their whole thing was just awesome, man. It was just, mm-hmm. those stretch of shows we played with them were pretty, they left an imprint for me for sure. I enjoyed that a lot. I wish all shows could be like that.
Yeah. That's cool, man. And cause I've always thought about that where I go to a show as a spectator watching and I always wonder, you know, what about the bands that are like touring with these other bands? There's always usually mutual respect, but like, it would be really cool if you're actually a fan of a band and you're touring with them. And obviously with what they did. Yeah. That's so cool. That's so cool. And, I'm also wondering when you obviously said you played music for quite a while, and you overlapped with baseball the whole time, which one was more nerve-wracking, going up on stage and performing or being out there on the mound and pitching?
Definitely holding a microphone in your hand. You know, when you're fronting a band, it's you know, there's, I don't want to say pressure, but there's a lot of, if I'm sick, if I've got a cold, if something's not right with me, it ruins my whole day.
Mm-hmm.
If I was a drummer or a guitar player, you know, you might be able to like battle through it and, you know, it doesn't get, unless you smash your hand or something, you can't tell as much. I don't want to embarrass the band. And if I crack up or if I can't hit a note or, you know, if I got a I've learned obviously how to pull off certain things, you know, live, that I couldn't do on a consistent basis, but it's hard to, in between songs when the musicians turn their backs to tune their guitars and you're kind of standing there with a microphone in your hand, everybody's staring at you. And I'm not a comedian. I'm not, now certain nights it's easier, but it's, for the most part, it's always been music for sure. That's been more of a challenge than playing in front of people or pitching.
Interesting. I mean, that's funny, 'cause that surprises me, 'cause obviously as a relief pitcher, you know, typically you're going to be put in kind of a sticky situation at times. You're gonna have to kind of help out the team, but the fact that you're kind of always at the front of the things with being the band, that makes sense. That surprises me. Yeah. All right. Well, real quick, I always like to end my podcast with just random, nothing to do with music questions. So if you still have just a couple more minutes, awesome. All right. So this first one is because I am a sugarholic and I eat way too much candy. So I'm just curious, what's your favorite candy and or dessert, if any?
I like all kinds of candy. You know, the real sugary ones, like the chewy sweet tarts or something. I'm not a big sour guy, but I've always liked chocolate candy too. I love candy.
Me too. So the chewy sweet tarts is kind of your go-to though?
No, I wouldn't say it's my go-to, but like when you said sugary, that was the first thing that popped in my head. One of those chewy sweet tarts, you know?
Oh, those things are great. I can definitely get on board with that. All right, next one. You know, sometimes it's hard to come up with your number one, so I'll accept your top three on this one, but favorite movie?
Favorite movies? Wow. Do I have time here, or is the clock ticking?
Oh, no time. Yeah, no time limit at all. You are ready to roll.
I like all kinds of documentaries, to be honest. The older I've gotten, I'm interested in, you know, and I don't want to single out one. I just want to use that as a documentary.
That works. Yeah.
Yeah. I like watching something that I know is real.
Looking at that though, are you more like a genre of documentary? Like my wife is huge into like murder mystery documentary type stuff, like serial killer. She loves the serial killer ones. I don't know why. But I love the sports ones lately. Those have been like real cool. Like the Tom Brady one and the Kobe Bryant one. And now the Magic Johnson one, those ones I love. So I'm curious what genre would you put for your favorite of those?
I'm not a big murder mystery guy, but I watched that Magic Johnson one. That was cool. I watched one on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar recently. That was pretty good.
Oh, I'll have to watch that.
Yeah, it was a good one. I just watched a Tony Hawk one. That was cool. You know, things that I'm into. I like the sports ones. I like, I'm watching this one right now about this. It's called The Invisible Pilot. This guy who he was like faked his death and then abandoned his family for 15 years or some shit. Become a drug smuggler. He flew crop dusting planes and then he became a drug smuggler. It's pretty interesting. Way.
Like during like 80s or 90s, like for like Pablo. 80s, yeah. Oh my gosh. For like Pablo Escobar, he's just like flying. My gosh. That's insane. I'll have to watch that one. That's cool.
things like that, you know, I like funny movies. I like movies with Adam Sandler, Will Ferrell, like that kind of stupid kind of funniness. You know, I guess having kids the last, you know, my oldest is 25. So having kids, you know, and watching movies with them, as long as it wasn't a cartoon or Barney, I was like, anything's better. You know, anything's better than that. So I watched a lot of cool movies that I probably wouldn't have watched, you know, without having kids. I loved as a kid watching like all the Bad News Bears movies, you know. I love those. You know, those always had a soft spot for me.
I should have worn my Sandlot hat. That's one of my favorite. I've got the Sandlot hat with Hercules on it.
That's another good one. You know, there's so many. But yeah, I really couldn't pick three movies.
It is tough, right? Like that's why I always asking it, because it typically leads to conversations like this where it's like, oh man, here's why I love this type or this movie, and it's like, but I love all these other ones that fit in that same type of realm. And
I know this. I know that if if I watch a movie for a 2 hour movie on Netflix, I spent 3 hours fumbling through the 30,000 movies available before I settled one. You know?
Yeah. Oh, and it's even worse with like TV series, because some of them are actually really, really engaging. And then you're committing to so much time. You're like, oh my gosh, this is crazy.
Yeah, if I do those, I gotta watch the ones that are already completed, because I can't wait till next week for another episode. I gotta like binge watch them for, you know, 3 days and be done.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my style.
Do you watch any like the Marvel ones? Cause I like, when you were talking about that, I thought of Moon Knight, which is the most recent one I watched. And I was like, I forgot how much I dislike these weekly releases. Like when I was a kid, that was all it was. But then, you know, Netflix started spoiling us with the whole season or the whole series. I'm like, this is how it should be. And then I got back to the weekly and I'm like, man, this is tough to do this.
I haven't watched that one. No, but I feel exactly the same way as you do.
Yeah. You should watch. It was actually pretty cool. I don't know if you like the Marvel movies or not, but I enjoyed it a lot.
Check it out. I mean, I got a long plane ride ahead of me, so I got to download something.
Yeah, I think it's only like 6 episodes, so that's about a plane ride's worth. You'd be good.
I might get me there.
Oh yeah, I guess you're going all the way to Europe, so yeah, you gotta. Yeah. You may have to download a little extra.
like 12 hours of movies.
Oh yeah, that's. I think Moon Knight.
Get a little sleeping in though too, though.
Yeah, so you'll get maybe 5.5 hours out of Moon Knight. So you know. All right, last one here for you. I'm going to cheat my question a little bit, because usually it's just favorite non-music related hobby, but actually maybe baseball's not in there anymore. So for you, what's your favorite non-music related hobby? Something you love doing that has nothing to do with music?
Well, I've always, you know, been pretty active and worked out, you know, whether it be mountain biking or skateboarding or something, you know, I've always that's kind of been my thing. I don't know if that's really considered a hobby or a
absolutely.
Sport. Yeah. I mean, that's what I do. I mean, to be honest with you, most of my time is probably consumed with music. So yeah. that is probably what it would be.
You know? Yeah. That's why I like that question. Cause it's usually, you know, most people are like, I don't really do anything else.
It's true.
And sad, but true. I did read you own, a skate park. Is that right?
I owned an indoor skate park for 21 years. Yeah, we had to close in 2019. But it was a lot of fun. It was, you know, it was always a passion of mine, and it was kind of my way of giving back to the community. And, you know, we tried to keep the prices down as long as we could. And then, you know, when we first opened in the mid 90s, it was kind of a rare thing. And then over the course of the next 10, 15 years, all the public parks started opening, all the free parks. And I mean, that would have been a dream to, you know, do something for free, but, unfortunately we had to pay the rent too. So,
yeah.
You know, the attendance kind of started to decline and it just kind of ran its course.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. You can thank Tony Hawk for that, you know, cause he's been pushing the public ones lately, which is awesome. Cause getting more kids on skateboards.
He supported us as well, you know, but not necessarily financially, but you know, and if it wasn't for, we could always tell when a new PlayStation game, you know, when the, would come out, because our attendance would rise for like the next couple of weeks, you know, get into it. So,
yeah, I love that. I mean,
but that's something that I'm kind of proud of, you know, is to do something on my own like that and bring it to the town that, you know, I grew up in that didn't have that when I was a kid. So I know that helped out a lot of kids and kept a lot of kids out of trouble and also helped a lot of kids. We spit out quite a few pro skaters, which was really cool.
That's way cool. Which, yeah. Who are some of the pro skaters that went through there?
There's Tori Pudwell.
Okay.
One, he's got a company now called Grizzly.
Oh, I know Grizzly. Yeah, the grip tapes.
Yeah, exactly. And there's another kid, Mike Capaldi, who local kid.
Oh, that, I know. You know. He's good. He's real good. Yeah. He's fun to watch.
Well. Yeah. And then just all the skaters, you know, being in the LA so-called area, that would come and we would get to meet and, you know, watch them skate and hang out and just watch them have a good time and appreciate, you know, what we had. And then, you know, the kids that we taught, like the younger kids that we gave lessons on the weekends to and seeing them come back the next week all excited. And then 2 months from now, you know, they'd be able to do stuff that they couldn't do, you know, couldn't even stand up on a board.
Yeah.
So it was a really cool experience to be able to see that, you know, over a couple of decades and actually see kids that were there in the beginning come back with their kids.
That's so cool, man.
That was really cool.
That is so epic. Oh man. Yeah. Honestly, like, you should be super stoked on all the things that you've done. And it was an absolute pleasure being able to meet you and talk with you, and really excited. I love the new album, obviously, but thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And it was my pleasure. And I'm glad you like the new music.
Absolutely. You made it to the end of another one. Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed this one. Scott is just awesome. If you enjoyed it, if you enjoy the podcast, if you like what we're doing over here, it's always super helpful if you subscribe to the podcast, whatever platform you listen on, share the heck out of it. You know, if you enjoy this, maybe you've got some friends or family who would enjoy it as well. Always appreciate it if you share it. And just leaving a comment, letting us know how we're doing, whether that's over on social media, whether that's on the podcast platform. We'd love to hear from you. But thank you so much for checking this one out. And until next time. Deuces.